Hey, just a quick little snippet for all you folks listening out there in podcast land. Just letting you know that I did edit this on the boat and on my tablet, and I haven't figured out how to get this silly program to funnel everything down into mono. So, other than the intro and the outro, you will hear me in your left channel and Kenyon in your right channel. Or speaker, however that may be. So if you're listening in your car or your stereo at home and you only hear one person, you've got a speaker out or you've got the balance off. So that would be why. All right, just a heads up. Guess thanks a lot, and enjoy the interview.
Thanks. Hello, ESBK Studio listeners, and boy, I hope the volume was not turned up in your car when that just happened. It is your favorite, well, okay, let's be realistic. It's your host, Richard Dort, back yet again with another episode, even though it's still the 18th of December in the studio. So, the magic of the internet. Last episode was last interview with Shalina. So all of these interviews, all three parts of interview with an Impulse owner, the two-part interview with Shalina, this interview with Kenyon Kluge of Zero Motorcycles, their electrical engineer, and the next episode will be a roundtable discussion with Zero owners. Don't know when you're going to see that one. I'm frivolously working right now in my buddy's recording studio. What was the name of your studio again, Drew? Do we remember what it was?
Audio Sedition.
Audio Sedition is the name of the studio. If you are in the Ashland City, Clarksville, Nashville area and need some work done, get a hold of me here at Richard at esbk.co. Hit me up on Twitter, TTXGP fan on Twitter, my Facebook page. If you need some work done, hit me up. And I will get you in contact with Drew, and you guys can work it out from there. Make sure that he has everything that you need, and you have everything he needs, and y'all can get some magic done. So, thank you again to Drew for letting me record here, because my little headset, my little Logitech headset, the dongle just quit. So, the audio was horrible. I was like, I'm not doing that again. And let me tell you, I am working with a microphone, folks, that's done much better things in this world, in the Nashville area, than let me talk at it. So if it sounds really nice and you guys appreciate that, please let me know. And I might have to bug Drew yet some more. But then I might have to exchange some money. But, you know, hey. So anyway, this is episode 32, interview with Kenyon Kluge of Zero Motorcycles. You're really going to like this, especially if you're a motorcycle nerd or just a nerd about these electric motorcycles in general. We really go over the details of the differences of the new 2014 bike. It is a year old. The new 2015s, by the time you're listening to this, may even be being delivered or have been delivered already. Why would I want to hear an interview? Well, it's a step-by-step progression. And I'm putting this out still, because I feel like if you're the type of person that likes the kind of details that are in this interview, which I'm listening to the interview, I'm going, wow, I wonder who these two, I mean, I know who Kenyon is, but the other guy talking to him seems to have like paid attention to this electric motorcycle stuff. The interview with Kenyon really goes over the differences from 2013 to 2014, which may help you appreciate even better and understand even better the differences from 2014 to 2015. And I will try to get Kenyon back on and at some point and do the same type of interview about the new 2015 bikes. Can't make any promises. I haven't kept in touch. Obviously, if you follow my website and you follow my podcast, you know that my life changed quite a bit. I just haven't kept up with things, so I'm not in touch with these folks like I used to be. I'm not on the inside like I used to be, and not saying I'm starting over from scratch, but I'm kind of am. So, in some respects, so trying to get these folks on the phone when I'm actually home and not on a ship for 5 weeks in the middle of the North Sea, is it was a challenge just to get them on the phone before, so you know, because they're busy folks. So we'll see what we can do. But Zero Motorcycles 2014 lineup. We talk about why the XU's gone. We talk about the details about the MX, and where that went or didn't go. You know, depending on, we'll talk about that, and you'll get the details and the understanding on that. So, you know, because Zero went from, what was it, 5, 6, 7 models down to 4. And also what the differences are. What is the details on that SR? Like, what makes that thing go? Why isn't it going to just melt itself like some of the race bikes tried to in the 2013 season? And where did this stuff come from, and how, what are the realities of the operation? Because we all know, you know, Zero talks about their top speed. It's not a liquid-cooled motor. It is an air-cooled motor. And everyone knows, like, yeah, it'll hit the top speed, but it only do it for a couple minutes, and then you get thermal cutback, especially at high speeds. So, at seriously high speeds. So, you know, what are the realities of this? We go through all this in this episode. And you know what? Let me stop giving the episode, the interview away. Let's just listen to Kenyon. All right? Here we go.
Hello, this is ESBK Studios. It is the 5th of December, 2013. I'm your host, Richard Dort, and I have Kenyon Kluge of Zero Motorcycles. How you doing today, man?
I'm great, thanks.
No problem. I heard you had a really nice vacation.
Yeah, a little time in Mexico was good. Did some scuba diving.
Nice. All right, so for the listeners, I'm sick, so I apologize. I'm talking to Kenyon today about the 2014 bikes, and one thing that we were just kind of led into talking briefly before we started here was get demo units for like magazines and for silly bloggers like me and Dominic Gianni of Autoblog Green and things like that. You guys are a small company. It's not easy just to send motorcycles out for people to ride. That's kind of what I'm gathering. Is that the case?
That's only partially true. You know, we have a pretty extensive dealer network in the U.S. and our European dealer network will be just as big as our U.S. dealerships pretty soon here. I think we're well over 50, approaching 60 dealers in the U.S. now. And every one of those dealers is going to have at least one demo unit. So really going to your local motorcycle dealer that deals Zero and setting up a test ride is a real possibility.
Oh, excellent. Okay, well, that's good for the viewers and for our listeners and for me. All right.
So I know you said you're in Tennessee. I actually just looked. You're right. Unfortunately for you, we got Atlanta and Alabama are the closest. So you got Birmingham and Marietta are your closest dealerships. But we're adding dealers all the time, and you know, we're going to fill them all in. So hopefully there's one a little closer to you pretty soon.
Nashville. I want one in Nashville.
Yeah, that's a big city. That'll probably be the first one to go in there.
Because I'm only 45 minutes north of Nashville, and that's where Protomech lives, Michael Beatty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure that would be probably a first location, too.
Sweet. You know, hopes and dreams. Like I said, I still have to get my license. I apologize again. So there's going to be dealerships are expanding. The dealership network is expanding, sorry. Test rides will be available at dealers. Right into the 2014 lineup, you've reduced the lineup to 4 bikes, and really it's kind of 3 bikes with a hot-rodded version of the S.
Right.
What happened to the MX and the XU?
We really didn't see a whole lot of interest in the MX. It's still, we still produce it. It's just not something that we're pushing out to a dealership level. We really wanted to focus on what was selling and what was the biggest interest for our customers. You know, we had the XU was another one that we kind of narrowed down. It's unfortunately a great bike, and it's a good entry level bike, but it's just, you know, the interest isn't there. I think that at least right now, the people that really want an electric bike want a full-size street bike. So that's where all the interest has been.
Okay, so simply following the market then.
Yeah.
So if you, because to me the MX was like, that was a badass dirt bike.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was a powerful dirt bike. Like I tell, you know, I'm a mountain bike mechanic or a bicycle mechanic, and we get, you know, motorcycle guys once in a while. I say, hey, what do you think of this much torque and this much horsepower in a dirt bike? And they go, how much torque?
Yeah.
You know? And instantaneous? Like, what? I'm really surprised that bike didn't take off. But did you guys get that in reviews with that? I thought one of the dirt bike magazines was going to do a review.
Yeah, I think there was a number of reviews over the year. You know, we still produce the FX, which is really our MX. You know, if you just put dirt tires on it and took the lights off, then you'd have your MX.
Well, wasn't there something like, wasn't the motor different? Or was the MX had a little more power, though, didn't it?
I don't think so. I could be wrong. I don't have the specs right at my fingertips here, but I believe they were pretty close.
They were close, but there was something that was, I thought there was something that was a little different. Oh, well.
I think it's the same amount of torque, but I believe, you might be right. I think the MX may have been geared a little differently, and I think it had the one size up controller.
Ah, okay.
Which may have been what it was. Don't take my word for it. I'm not familiar with exactly what we were shipping versus what we are. That FX, though, is really, you know, it's every bit of the MX now.
Okay.
Versus what it was. The FX, you know, wheelies on command, it's just got instant torque. Thing is so much fun. If you just put knobbies on it, it's a dirt bike.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So if you really, but if someone's like, I need an MX, they can either buy an FX, strip the streetlights off, or they can get a hold of you guys and order one?
I'm not sure the logistics of that. I think they're kind of sold on a case-by-case basis.
Okay.
Like, I know a race team wanted one, and so we sold one to an off-road race team. But, yeah, I think if you talk to the sales guys, you know, they'd be happy to take your money.
Yeah, there's always that. All right, cool. All right, so we'll get that cleared up. The SR, that is pretty much an evolution of the 2013 race season, isn't it?
Yeah. Directly, I mean, we, you know, everybody was fooling with the size 6 controller, and that's basically what the SR is. You know, some of the cooling that we did and some of the race development that we did on magnet temperatures and stuff like that has gone straight into the development of this motor. So it is really the S, just with everything we needed to make the race bike go.
Sweet. You guys have gone to a 140 tire in the rear. Any particular reason you did that? I know that's what all the racers were using, but that was because of the smallest radial size it could get.
It was done through some development. We tried a 150, and then we tried some smaller stuff, and that was really what worked well on the track, and it was the right profile for that rim.
Right.
So that you could get all the way over to the edge and still have really maximum contact patch.
Yeah.
So kind of through development, you know, we tested some other stuff, and that really seemed to work pretty good. I know some of the guys, I think like Ted Rich was running even a narrower tire. He was running a full slick, and it was, I think he was running like a front on the rear, just to get that real narrow profile. And it worked pretty good for him, but I think even after a little bit, he switched over to the wider 140 just to get a little bit more contact patch on the rear too.
Okay. Okay, and so you guys, you haven't put a wider rim on the back of that yet, and it's got 106 foot-pound of torque.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work?
it's just right there. I mean, with that, I mean, that was what was key to that tire profile too. You know, it's fun if you're leaned over, you can spin up that wheel coming out of the corner, but you know, it's not too much. I would say it's a really nice setup where the way it is now. It gives you, you know, just enough of that power that you feel like it's just yanking you out of the corner, but it's not so ridiculous that you feel like you need a big fat tire on there.
Okay. Yeah, I was talking a little bit, I can't remember which form it was because I'm on a few of them, about how the torque and electric motors seem to come on versus how they come on in a gas bike. You know, I mean, you had a Buell XB, you know, 106 foot-pound. The only thing I think of that compares to that is the old Buell XB 12R.
Mm-hmm.
And that had some fat 180 on the back, you know, to keep that sucker planted. So, and I just, there's some concern that the belt might not hold up to the new power of the SR. Is that a valid concern or?
No, I mean, we've done pretty extensive testing with it, and, you know, it's a little bit more of a risk than it was. You know, I would say on the 2012s or even the just S's in the 2013s, you know, you could get away with a lot with those belts and just run them as is. But so maybe you have to watch that your tension is more in range and just make sure it's adjusted properly. But as long as it's adjusted properly, we haven't seen any problems with the belts at all.
Sweet. Okay. I didn't necessarily think so because the way the electric torque comes on, it's constant and smooth and not jarring. I didn't think it was going to, but, you know, what do I know? That's what I'm asking. That's what I'm talking to you. Okay. So now you guys, you upgraded the frame, correct? There's a small, if I'm correct, there's been a small update to the frame.
Well.
Because you're running like 43 millimeter inverted forks now.
Yeah. So the triple clamps. Yeah. Actually, so there's a couple changes to the frame. The headset all got bigger. Bearings changed and triple clamps changed in order to accommodate those forks.
Okay.
So all of that got bigger. Although, you know, it just kind of went up a size, so it didn't really add a lot of weight or anything, but just, like, larger diameter bearings and slightly larger triple clamps and such. So it got a bit more rigidity that way. And then we have our new, we call it the power module, the extra module that you can put up in the gas tank area.
Yeah.
The frame changed to accommodate that as well. And that ended up adding some more lateral rigidity to it as well, and further supported that the kind of biggerness of the head to triple clamp area. So the whole frame got a little stiffer, and then just, you know, minor changes throughout there. And on the, you know, again on the shock, we changed the shock as well, so the shock mounts changed in the rear a little bit, and everything got a tad bit stiffer in that area as well.
Oh, sweet. What are you guys running for a rear shock now?
It's a slightly larger diameter shock, so it has more oil in it and won't fatigue as quickly.
Oh, good.
It is, you know, it's from the same company. It's just the next size up, basically.
Excellent. Oh, I didn't realize the shock had changed as well.
Yeah.
All right. So that you've got improved stiffness all over. Will we see you guys? Is there going to be a point where you guys are forced to redesign that rear swing arm and be able to fit a 4-inch rim or a 5-inch rim or something like that?
It's hard to say. I mean, I don't know whether it's going to go that way. Whether you know it'll be a rear swing arm redesign or whether we'll just go to a different model will drive, you know, a different design.
Okay.
You know, with the current, you know, it's all kind of about geometry and really there's only a need when you get to the point where the geometry isn't working. And really the, you know, it's one thing with the wheel and the tire and the power range that we're in, the geometry just works really well. You know, we don't really need that much of a bigger tire right now. The forks, you know, that we went to now, I think, are you know, going to the 43 millimeter was a big step up, and that's helped a lot. But I don't know that we need to go much further than that. We'll continue refining the quality and the setup of the forks and the shock and that kind of thing. But I don't know that we need to do another big jump there. So
no, I wouldn't say so either.
And we're not really talking about a model now, but, you know, if we were to do you know, a sport bike or something like that, then maybe you'd want a bigger rim because your purpose is different. So that might drive that sort of change. But we're not, that's not on the table right now. So at least with this style of bike and the setup that we have right now, I think that we've got a pretty good package all the way around.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Richard, I can never remember his last name, and I had him on for an electric motorcycle roundtable once, but, you know him. I just know him as Richard 230. he put an order in for a 2014 S. He said that way now he can ride from his house to the Zero factory without having to recharge.
Right.
Excellent.
Where is his house? Do you know? Is he up here in the North Bay somewhere?
No, he's south of you.
Oh, okay.
He's south of you. I can't remember where though, but like he's just out of range. He has to ride his BMW and able to go there. And, actually he's one of the customer videos.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Older gentleman, Richard. Right. Yeah, we were geeking out about sport touring stuff. It was pretty funny. The other guys were like, what are they talking about? We're talking about tires and all kinds of weird stuff. It was fun. That was like a year or so ago.
Well, with our, you know, with our new power tank, you know, the extra module that goes on there, you know, we've seen as much as 171 miles worth of range. That's on city miles.
Yeah. I was like, I mean, I did a quick little write-up. I was at home. I was on vacation. Well, vacation, not really. Back in Maine. And I had enough time when you guys put it out, a little write-up. Who'd have thought? 13.5 kilowatt hours nominal. I know it's 14.2 max.
Mm-hmm.
That's the size of the battery packs that the TTX, the big bikes, were running in, like, what, 2011?
Yeah.
You know, from what I understand, like, it was, like, all, they were all, like, 13 to 14 kilowatt hours back then. You know, that's, and now we've got it on a street bike.
Mm-hmm.
That weighs less than those super bikes. A lot less. It's impressive, man. It's impressive. You guys should be proud.
The battery technology is just, you know, how it comes around. Everybody predicted it, but it actually came true for once.
Well, I mean, is there something that we, how much can you talk about the battery technology, is it different than the 2013 or is it the same?
It's the same. With you know, we make changes year over year. The design went through some improvements, but it's fundamentally the same battery design as 13.
Excellent. So you just found room to put this booster pack that you can, and that's what he did. He ordered one with the booster pack.
Right.
And someone had said, why don't you get the SR? And you know, like I said, I've interviewed Richard, and we're two different types of riders. I mean, I was a Viffer rider, so I know the sport touring crowd, and We had a lot to talk about when it came to like tires and things like that, but you know, I'm the chucklehead that scraped pegs with his mom in the back going up a mountain, you know, mountain pass in New Hampshire. You know, this is not Richard's style. You know, right. This is not how he does things. So I, you know, it was funny to hear someone, why don't you get an SR, Richard? Like, you know, and someone pointed out, well, the regular S is still twice as powerful as his Zero.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's still going to have twice the power of the one in his 2012 that he has now. So only he's going to have insane range.
Right.
He's never going to charge that thing once a week, you know.
Yeah.
It'll be awesome. All right. Is there a noticeable difference in how the new bikes ride? Or is it just kind of a feel?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not a huge evolution from the 13, but from a racer standpoint, I love the bigger forks. They work so much better.
Yeah.
The shock was a big improvement too.
Oh.
So I really like the suspension. I didn't really ever have any complaints about the frame, but the new one feels even more rigid than the old one. So it wasn't a complaint of mine, but it is noticeable. You know, other than that, it's not a huge difference between the 13s and the 14s, except for those guys that, you know, really like the front end feel out of those bigger forks. You know, you can just having the diameter there gives you a lot more to play with, and gives you a lot more feedback.
Yeah. As well, I mean, I can sympathize. I went from a 1986 500 Interceptor that had either 37 or 38 millimeter forks to a 91 VFR. That, you know, so I had this steel chassis, the steel square, you know, frame with little forks and a cast aluminum swing arm to a 91 VFR with a giant stiff cast single side swing arm, aluminum kind of, what are the Yamaha calls it, a delta box, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that big and 41 millimeter forks. It was a big difference.
Yeah, for sure.
So no, I'm really excited. I saw 43 millimeter forks and I was like, hallelujah. Yeah. Like, yay. But I clearly am, you know, I mean, you're an actual, you know, racer, and I'm just an enthusiast, but I always love to see kind of more sport bike stuff.
Oh yeah. I mean, they're definitely fun. And the, you know, the SR with that extra bit of power is super fun. You know, that thing's just a kick in the pants. You know, it really jumps out of the corners, and it gives you that little bit of extra that, you know, the Canyon Carver guys and racers and stuff just are looking for. It's just right. You know, you get on it and it's so much fun.
Nice.
And the FX 2, you know, didn't go through huge evolution, but it just went through a bit of refinement. And that thing is so much fun to ride. You know, it's like you're just cruising along on a street and you can just romp the throttle and bring it up into a wheelie without even trying. And you just feel like doing something bad when you're
riding. Yeah, it talks. says bad things. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the GSXR of electric motorcycles. That's what you're telling me.
Yeah, kind of, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how many people are going to understand what I just said, but there's enough.
I'm sure there'll be plenty, yeah.
Yeah. What little things do you guys do to the FX?
Well, it's got, you know, it went through a lot of looks stuff, so it's got projection beam headlights, which was a nice touch. You know, the battery system and stuff has gone through, though we didn't really fundamentally change the batteries. The hot swap is a little cleaner. What else do we change on that? The suspension went through a lot more tuning. We worked pretty in depth on shim stacks and the valving and front and rear to really get that a little more refined and to feel better on the road.
Okay. That was one of the complaints, not of the FX, but of the 2013S, is that I think the suspension was better than a 12, but it still felt harsh. I think you guys had worked with a superbike racer to tune that. Is 2014, are you kind of confident that those are going to feel a little more plush, a little more refined this year?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I don't think it was so much a complaint on the FX because it's, you know, it's still pretty compliant since it is sort of a dual sport dirt bike chassis and the suspension is set up accordingly. But on the, you know, the street bikes, we really worked on that and tried to get rid of that harsh feeling. I think it was just a little bit aggressive valving. So you kind of feel the bumps a little more than you should. So we did quite a bit of work on that, and I think that people like that. And especially those bigger forks, it just disappeared as soon as you put the forks on, and the shock we had to work with a little bit more to get that going.
Do the balance.
The big thing you're going to see, too, is all of our bikes have the new dash.
Yes.
And that really provides a lot of great information that previously you could maybe only get through the app. So you're going to see a lot more information right in front of you now. It's real sleek looking, and the SOC is more precise and it has more granularity in its gauge, and it gives you a percentage right next to it. And you can see your torque numbers and your regen numbers right there on the dash. So that's really going to be a cool thing. I think everybody's going to really like that.
Excellent. I'm jumping around a little bit, but I apologize. Listen, I've already talked about I'm sick, so I'm not thinking as clearly as I'd like to. The motor in the SR, is it the same motor in the S, or is it a different motor?
It's the same motor with slightly higher spec components in it.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So just to deal with the extra power that the size 6 puts out, the motor has got some slightly upgraded components in it.
All right. Now, one question. The heat, it has heat. So the magnets in the SR's motor are more heat resistant. Is that correct?
Right. Okay. Yes, they're. That's a little bit of the cost that you're paying for is the slightly higher temperature spec magnets, which allows us to run the motor slightly hotter without damaging the magnets. So.
Excellent. Okay, cool. Yeah, that was definitely one of the questions I'd seen on the forums. Why not the size 6 last year? Why this year? And are you confident that you won't have any heat issues and things like that? What? Yeah, why now?
Well, you know, we wanted to ease into it. A little bit of it is a cost thing. You know, there is a bit of a cost adder on the SR.
Yep.
You know, last year we did, you know, the 13 model year bike was almost a complete tear up from the 12, so we changed almost everything about the motorcycle there. So we wanted to stay, you know, we wanted to really refine things and stay within our limits on that and do it right. So it was talked about before, and we decided to put it off and do it this year and do it right as its own model, where we could justify the, you know, the higher temp magnets in the motor and the size 6 controller, and so the whole package was really refined and made to work, and it also allowed us, you know, to run it on track days and really get a lot of testing on this setup, and really use some of the racers out there to be our guinea pigs as well.
Yeah, because by the end of the season, everyone was, well, the season, two whole races.
Right.
Yeah, by the second race at Indy, everyone was on the size 6, weren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, we had, I think Ted was the only one that hadn't gone and bought one, and we had an extra here, that so we just, when we did his motor, we sent him a size 6 pack with it.
Oh, sweet. Sweet. Cool. Shoot, let's see here, the gauge, everything else is you know, it's just been an evolution. The power pack, the extra pack, how did that come about? Is there a story behind that? You guys kind of, when you were looking at it the first time, said, gee, we could put that here, but decided not to. How did that kind of come about?
Well, you know, range is the biggest thing. You know, you ask anybody what they want, they want more range. And we, I think it kind of came about as a hey, we could kind of do this sort of thing. You know, it maybe wasn't directly in the plan, but we had a monolith battery, and then we noticed, you know, we've got this modular system that we've built for the dirt bike chassis, where you can swap these modules in and out. And I think somebody just asked the question, hey, why couldn't we just put a module on top of the monolith battery and add another 2.5 kilowatts. And there's no reason not to. It's just a pretty simple add-on harness, and you need the module. So, and we needed some way to hold that module, so it had to be incorporated into the frame. But it was kind of a no-brainer to do once you saw how easy it was.
Sweet, sweet. So that person got a bonus, I take it.
Yeah. If anybody could remember who it was. But.
Fair enough. That's funny. All right. Let's see. So it's got a new dash. You got the SR. It's the same motor, but with high temp magnets and maybe one or two other little thingies to help deal with the extra power and the size 6 controller. You're running 140 tires this year. You think you guys are sure the belts can handle it? Is there anything else that's changed? You put new headlights on those S's this year?
No, I believe the S and the SR retain their same headlight.
Okay.
What else? I'm trying to think what the other changes are. You know, a lot of there's a whole bunch of little, you know, form, fit.
Yeah.
They're a little more refined this year. Everything kind of went through an iteration. Just got a little better. The passenger foot pegs are a little nicer. The app is actually going through some more changes, and it's going to have a release here pretty quick. As well. I'm not sure the timing of the release on that. I know that they're finishing it up. I think probably by the time anybody has any of the new bikes in hand, the new app will be out. And that'll be, I think that's backwards compatible too, so that'll be nice. The side body work on the S's went through a big change. You can kind of see it in the pictures. It's kind of, it channels air a little. They're a little more functional now. They channel a little bit of air back towards the motor.
Yep.
Which is nice. They look a little nicer. They block a little bit of the water that was coming in through the sides of them. So they look nicer and they're a little more functional. So that was another one of the changes.
Cool.
The seat foam is, people worked on that a lot. People's butts weren't too happy with the seat foam before, but we went through a bunch of testing on that, so I think that should be a little nicer this year as well.
Excellent. Is this got the same air ducting that the race bikes had, or is...
No, the motors for a street application are sealed, so we don't allow any water or any passage of air or water into the motor at all.
Okay.
And that's for, you know, for longevity and really in a street application, it's not necessary. It's only when you're on the racetrack and you can really, hold sustained power for long periods of time that the extra cooling becomes necessary.
Cool. Very cool. All right. Last year you could run an S up to its top speed. And you couldn't hold it there very long before you started getting thermal cut back. What about this year's bikes? Is that improved or is it the same?
It is improved. Yeah. It's, I'm not sure what the limit is at max speed. Like the SR will do a little over 100 miles an hour. I'm not sure how long you can sustain that, but, you know, under track testing and stuff, we were sustaining it as long as you could go down the straightaway, so.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, long enough for law enforcement to actually get caught speeding, in other words.
Right.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, the motors went through some iterative changes as well. We changed how we sealed them in a couple areas and made some of the thermal transfer a little bit better. And so everything got had a going over and got refined a bit.
Yeah, it's just a nice, simple refinement. The battery packs from the FX and the MX, the removable, and the XU even, the removable battery packs, they got recalled. Can you talk about that?
I can tell you what the basis of the recall is, which is public information. We had there was a process issue with our manufacturer where they were closing them up a little bit too quickly and the silicone inside wasn't curing all the way. And we really, with the recall, I mentioned earlier that you asked if the batteries had changed. Well, so because of that, we really did a lot of good work in that area. And so because of the recall, everybody's getting these new battery packs with, a fully potted design. Now there's, they're like a brick of cells basically that go into these metal containers. So, They did a lot of really nice work there in making them. We think they're probably the best, most energy dense and environmentally protected batteries out there in the market.
Sweet. There wasn't too much. I mean, there wasn't too much going on for 2014 other than the drop bikes, and then the SR, which is a pretty big deal. What's dealer response been from the SR?
I think people are pretty excited about it. It was meant as a, you know, we're going to make some limited number of these, and I think that's how they were thinking about it. But I don't know if that's going to go over. I think they may end up switching over. Fortunately, you know, it's really an S, so it's just a few minor part changes, so we can kind of adjust our numbers as we see demand coming in from the dealerships. And we're really right now, you know, we just announced it at EICMA, and so the dealers are starting to get their orders in now. So we'll see in a few months, you know, we'll have a better idea of the mix that they're looking for.
All right, cool. I had thought when we clearly heard about the rumors on the Electric Motorcycle Forum about the SR or the Type S or whatever they were going to call it, it's clearly an SR. Me being the race-focused, you know, junkie that I am, I had thought it would be a limited production for racers only, like a answer to the TTX. Mm-hmm. And then you guys came out, and then but Protomet called it. He's like, I think it's just going to be with the Size 6 controller and be streetable. The way you just talked, it was kind of like an in-between thing. Was it going to be just kind of for the racer crowd, or how'd you guys originally envision it?
No, I think it's always been envisioned as a widely available model. I think that it just wasn't known at first, you know, how popular it was going to be. So I thought of, well, you know, maybe we'll make a limited number of these and see how it sells. But I think it's going to be, it's going to be a model just along with the rest of the models now. And it seems like it's moved in that direction rather than being, a small run kind of thing.
Yeah. All right. Cool. How's the new facilities? I was just thinking about that. You guys moved several months ago, right?
Yeah. Spring. It's been 6 months or so now. Yeah, it's nice. It's just down the street from us, so it's we didn't move very far, but it gave us an opportunity to really build up from the ground up and put things the way we wanted them, which is nice. You know, the last building we were kind of, it was one of those things where it kept growing and growing, so it kind of just took over another room and then took over another room, and it wasn't really thought out from the ground up. So this gave us the opportunity to come in, set up the line and set up the office areas and really start to build a headquarters that made sense. So it's pretty nice facilities. The warehouse facilities are quite a bit bigger, and the production floor is bigger, and the office area is a lot nicer.
So. You guys, I remember hearing from Hollywood Electrics on Facebook, and I think a few other dealers, you guys were basically selling them as fast as you can make them this year, weren't you?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's awesome. Are you going to be able to keep up with demand a little bit more now with the bigger facility?
Yeah, and that was really the desire, was to set something up that allows us to ramp and not just with this demand, but, you know, we have a plan of how many units we'd like to be selling and producing, and I think we can ramp to that point with this new facility.
Cool. What can we expect from, say someone's looking at the 2014, I mean, in the U.S., you're going to look at the ERR, or the FIM's E-Road Racing Series, and ARMA's new U.S. E-Moto Racing Series, mm-hmm. that Arthur Cowitz is organizing. I know you had a pretty good 2012 with the four engineering zeros that Zero let you have, and you get to put guest riders on there, and it was a really great racing. This year, the racing budget didn't seem to be as big, and but you know, with the thanks of Hollywood Electrics and some people actually just buying their own bikes, you guys did a really good showing and actually quite successful. You won the unofficial eSupersport award handed out by Parker.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any hope of seeing a little more support for the racing folks? You know, I mean, I know it's not that not for lack of want, but is 2014 looking a little better, or 2013 was such a successful year? I mean, the SR is based off of, you know, it's basically what the guys were racing this year.
Right. It's hard to say. You know, I'm disappointed in that the FIM e-road racing, at least at this point, doesn't look like they're going to have a U.S. stop. So, you know, I think a lot of people in the U.S. felt like we were left out in the cold a little by that. And, but on the other hand, it spurred things like, you know, Arthur went out and talked to Arma. Brian Wiseman from Bramo and myself have been working with AFM. And, you know, we actually did a kind of trial run at their last race in the October race at Thunder Hill.
Yeah.
Allowed us to come out and run with the gas bikes. And we've been working closely with them, both talking to them about what, like, an e-supersport or e-road racing or whatever you're going to call it. It seems like it's changing names, but, you know, some sort of, you know, national championship where the ARMA points and AFM points and, I don't know, if CCS wants to pick it up or any of the other racing organizations want to pick up this rule structure, how we could have, you know, a league where you could score points in that league and be scored on a national level against all the other electrics. But then we're also really pushing pretty hard just for electric bikes to be accepted in just like any other motorcycle. So you can pick your electric bike and go race in an appropriate class against all other bikes that are out there. You know, right now it's all gas bikes, but, you know, maybe it'll be something else in the future too. But so at least somebody could just go buy it and race it just like they would if they went and bought a Gixxer or a R6 or any other bike.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that was the basis for the THGP's eSuperstock. They're going to try to put out a rules package for it that everyone can adopt, and then there would be a national champion, you know, or a day where everyone would face off. But it doesn't look like they got that organized, so.
Yeah, I think for that side of it, they were really depending on other people to fill in that side of it, and it hasn't really happened for them.
Okay.
And I think that's kind of because, you know, we can go out to AFM and push that side of it, so we're doing it, but, you know, and maybe it'll just be that they pick up whatever rules we were able to agree upon for AFM.
Yeah. I say that's the way, you know. That's the biggest issue I've seen is that no one's had rules.
Right.
Everyone talks about it. Of course, you know me. I'm like, well, just ask me. I'll make some rules for everyone. Everyone made them, you know. What do you know, Richard? You've never raced a day in your life. Well, you know, done some mountain bike races. What, you know.
Whatever. You know, it all makes sense.
Yeah, it all worked out. Yeah, I'm really disappointed that no one's had, like, rules. I mean, I don't know it's that hard, but, I mean, there's the detailed stuff. The nitty-gritty stuff is a pain and stuff like that. But, I mean, the basic package for these things doesn't seem to be that hard. But what is that like, working with the AFM on that? Is there, like, a lot of tripping up, or is it just you guys are busy and you kind of work on it a little bit and then you don't, or?
Yeah, it's been, when we came back from Indianapolis, we were kind of all over it, and and we're going back and forth with them pretty regularly. And then I've been really busy, and so I haven't had a chance to really follow up. But I will here probably in the next couple weeks. They've been pretty good and really open and receptive. I mean, you know, they're like any other organization. Getting people out on the grid means that they bring in more money to support their organization. AFM happens to be a nonprofit, but it's a nonprofit with the goal of racing. So the more people they can get on the grids, the more the better events they can put on and stuff. So they're keen to have anybody that's willing to come race. So they but they're also one of the oldest racing organizations in the U.S. So they're a great resource in this sense, because they can they really have a lot of wealth and opinions about what those rules should look like. So I've drawn up a draft now that's probably gone through maybe 12 iterations or so between me and Bramo and AFM, and I think we're pretty close. And it's been sent out a couple times to like Arthur and Jeremiah and all those that had an interest. So we're definitely trying to keep everybody in the loop and not do this in a closed environment at all.
All right. Well, you can always send me a copy.
Sure. I'd be happy to, actually, and I'd love to get your input on it.
Send away, man. Send away. You know me. I'll have an opinion about something.
Sounds good. Yeah, I'll dig it up then, because I got to revisit again soon here in the next week or so, and I'll put you on the list.
All right. Cool. All right. So we're not sure is there any plans for? Oh, I'm gonna actually, before I go too far down that rabbit hole, your round at AFM. What was the reception like? Because Bramo had broke the ice in two rounds before the before Laguna and Indy, and then went back. What was the feel and the vibe like? Were you impressed? Was it a lot more receptive than you thought? Or
yeah, it was. Yes and no. It was. It was almost that people didn't even notice or care. Electrics, you know, these are racers. You know, you're just another guy they got to beat. And so, I mean, there's definitely interest. I don't want to overstate that too much, but it was, it was almost like we were just another, you know, we're just a couple more guys out there racing with them, guys and girls, actually.
Yep.
You know, that were out there racing with them. So, so in that sense, it was kind of cool, because it wasn't, you know, there wasn't really much of a differentiator there. We were just on another brand of bike.
Sweet. So they'd kind of gotten past the it's electric and I might die if it crashes on me, and none of that was a concern. It was just, you're just another racer and I have to beat yet another guy.
Yeah.
Only this guy I might not hear coming.
Right.
on the race bikes, are you guys using belts on the race bikes, or do you change to chain?
No, we're using belts on the race bikes too.
Oh, wow. And no issues, right?
Nope. We haven't had a single belt issue on the race bikes at all.
And what brand are you guys using on the belts?
I believe they're Gates belts.
Gates belts.
They do our sprockets for them too. So
sweet.
Yeah, they helped us with the, you know, we went to them and said we want a belt set up, and they helped us engineer it.
Nice, nice. All right. Let's see here. So we don't know what 2014 is going to look like for you guys yet, huh?
As far as racing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure yet. We're going to certainly do more AFM rounds. I'd like to try and do at least some, if not all, of the armor rounds. All might be a little aggressive, because a lot of them are on the other side of the country, so we'll see.
Deal. I don't get to go any of the West Coast rounds, so I live out here. There's the closest racetrack to me is Barber. It's actually closer than Indy. Yeah, that's one of them. Yeah, so you got like 3-4 tracks in that Arma series that if I get really brave on my 500 Interceptor and it's running and I can get the time off, I can make within a day's ride.
Barber's I haven't been to Barber, but I hear it's a really nice facility.
That's what Shalina keeps telling me. She really likes it. And it's like only 3.5 hours from my house. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so that'd be something I'd have to make for sure.
One of the Arma rounds is there, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Armor, I mean not armor, Barber, and Georgia.
Mm-hmm. That's a good track, too.
Yeah, it was. It's not Road Atlanta, though. It's Roebling Road.
Oh, Roebling. No, I haven't been there. I've been to Atlanta, but...
Yeah, that was a bummer. I thought it was going to be Atlanta, but it's not. Roebling Road, that's an 8-hour ride on the 500 Interceptors. Oh, shoot, I can't remember off the top of my head right now, but there was, like, Florida, Daytona is... I have to fly there. That was a 6-hour flight, much less, you know, riding there. So, and then there's New Jersey. That was on the list too. So I liked it because it got people all over the country. What is your take on the whole? This is just another series to race in, right?
Yeah.
Another opportunity. Well, I'd love to see you guys make the effort to come out and do some of the East Coast stuff because I don't think they've had any exposure. Oh, Louisiana, Lola is on that list too.
Cool.
New Orleans, a brand new track. It'd be nice to get the electrics out here in front of the crowds out on this side of the country. The West Coast has had it good for too long.
Yeah. I'd love to, but we'll have to see how that goes.
Yeah, that's a lot of travel. A lot of travel. I think I've covered everything I can think of, man. You did two races this year. You podiumed every race, didn't you?
Yeah.
Sweet. So that was a good year for you.
Yeah, I felt good this year. We had more time on the on track days and stuff, so we kind of knew what we needed to do going into the races this year. So I think we were a little better prepared, and that felt nice.
Nice. Shoot, any comments from the racing? Anything that stands out that maybe no one else picked up on?
Well, it was cool to see, I mean, there was a couple things. It was cool to see, you know, everybody trying different stuff this year. You know, there was 4-0s out there, and like I said, you know, we offered everybody, you know, the same packages, but everybody chose their own route on them. And, so it was pretty neat to see all the different implementations and how they worked out and the collaboration of sharing of information. You know, I think when we went to Indiana, all 4-0s all had different gearing for the first session, so it just kind of worked out that way. But we said, all right, well, we'll just figure it out and see which one's best. And then we had all brought some spares, so everybody swapped gearing around once after the first session, and had a better idea of what was working there.
Nice, that's cool.
That's fun. Definitely the Brahmo relationship with us not just them, but everybody, the camaraderie at the track this year was outstanding. It really made me think back and feel like the days when I started racing, back in the late 90s, you know, the AFM was really like that. I went there to see my friends, and it felt a lot more like that, this year rather than kind of going to race around with strangers. So, I really appreciated that. And all the camaraderie that was going on at the track, and just being able to have conversations with everybody and talk was a lot of fun.
Sweet. I heckled Shalina a little bit. I didn't heckle her. Because people were asking, like, why was Shalina so far back? And it was on the Bramble Forum. Brian was, like, trying to be very PC about it, and I said, I'll be the prick. It's the rider. And so I told Shalina, I got a little chastised. What? Apparently she had some real issues. Her springs were just too stiff at Indy, and it threw her for a loop. So,
yeah, I know she was talking about that, and she was jumping from the 1200 to that, and I think having a hard time going between chassis and stuff too. So,
oh yeah, she said she got off the 1200 and literally had like enough time to swap helmets and jump on the Impulse, the TTX, and, like, she was still buckling her helmet when the two, Shane and Eric, pulled out of the pits. So, yeah, she was going hard, but, you know, yeah, she was all warmed up, right?
Yeah. Sometimes that's not so bad, you know, you've just seen the track and get to go back out there.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, she said she had a great race with Jeremiah and Ted, a lot of swapping and change of places, and it was a good race. So that's really cool. All those fans were all looking forward to the big battle between the new Zero and the TTX. That was definitely we're definitely looking forward to that. So yeah, that was cool. It was just too bad it was only two races.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a bummer. They just kept canceling races. So.
Oh well, we'll see. Well,
looking forward to going back to Miller again. That's a really fun track.
I don't think they're going. Well, I think now that World Superbike's not there, I don't think they're going back to Miller.
No.
Which sucks. But I know. Yeah, one of the racers said it was too far out in the middle of nowhere. Too far to travel.
Yeah, it's not too bad for me, but anything that's out of California is at least that far. So for us, it's not so bad. You're trying to get over the Rocky Mountains takes time no matter which way you go.
Oh yeah, I just take an airplane if I can. Fortunately, all right, man.
We've got a lot of good tracks on this side, but
we got good stuff out here. But it's hard. You know, to travel clear across the country. It's a big country. All right, man. Well, I really appreciate your time, and thanks for all the information.
Yeah, it's been good talking to you again.
All right, thanks a lot. And don't forget to send me those rules.
Yeah, I'll do that. I'll put you on the list.
All right, you got my email?
I don't know if I do. Go ahead and why don't you send it to me just in case.
Okay, will do, man. All right, I'll talk to you later, man.
Okay, talk to you later.
All right, bye.
All right, what a great interview with Kenyon. Congratulations to Kenyon on his honeymoon, on his new baby, all that. Thank you again, yet again, Kenyon, for taking the time out. I know it was a year ago, and I'm just now getting this stuff out, but I think it's important to still put it out there and let anyone listen to it who might find it important. If you, by chance, listen to this, you know, on a whim going, well, we'll listen to what Richard had to say and, you know, and see what Richard dug up on a bike that's a year old that's not going to be sold anymore, and you found it really informative, please share it. Please let everyone else know, because, you know, a lot of folks are going to look at this and go, he's talking about 2014 bikes? Like, why? They're gone. They're done. And if you found it informative, and then let them know. Share it on Facebook. Share it on Twitter. Let people know about the website. Let's help grow this a little bit. Somebody's whooping my butt on likes.
Hello, folks. This is your host, Richard. I am recording this halfway through my 5-week hitch, not 6-week, thankfully. On the boat, I'm sure you can hear the engine in the background. Just want to let you know, it's kind of exciting news. I did get a hold of Kenyon, and I will be setting up an interview with him when I go home. He asked me to email him as soon as I was on the plane, headed home, and so that we can set up an interview time. So he got back in touch with me. I've put a few feelers out. I've heard back from about half of them, which is about right. So we'll hopefully, when I get home, I'll be editing that Zero roundtable from a year ago, the roundtable of Zero Owners. So I'll be editing that and getting that out. You should be hearing this on the 29th of January, and then 2 weeks later you'll hear the Zero Owners roundtable, and hopefully you'll have a podcast every 2 weeks. That's what I'm aiming for. So I hope to get a few interviews lined up together, and I really want to get some pundits together and talk about the 2014 race season and what the hell happened. So anyway, I'll leave you all alone. Have a good day. Keep your rubber side down.